I think somebody brought up they're working with dogs, and that each dog is such an individual, and boy, is that true, isn't it? Each dog is such an individual. So that's one of the reasons why it's really good to know as many different techniques as you can, and also to be open-minded enough so that you don't think you have to use the same thing on every dog. And I think that's one of the biggest issues that I have with organizations like Barkbusters, or I'm sure there are others, where they give you these tools and they say all the problems can be solved with these particular tools. And I don't think they can any more than I think, you know, one thing can fix all humans. You know, it actually would be very egotistical of us to think that. Which is why I also think that thinking outside the box and opening up your brain and saying, oh yeah, well, this might work better on this dog, or this might work better on this dog, are really good things to do. And I very much dislike the whole idea that I know what I'm doing and I'm not going to teach you anything. And that is rife in this particular field, where dog trainers go, in fact, if you just go on the web, you can see it, you know, I'll teach your dog to be good in 5 minutes, and no, I'm not going to tell you how it's done on the web, because I'm not going to do that. And if you go onto my website, I've got all these handouts and all that kind of stuff, and those are for everybody. And yeah, some of them aren't going to work on some dogs, and some will work on other dogs, but I think that what we need to do is open source. We need to think of dog training as open source instead of being proprietary. And speaking of open source. She says, I live with two vegetarians. I'm okay with vegan stuff. It's all right.
At this point, I'll eat anything.
Yeah. I'm starving. You people aren't feeding me today. Okay, any other thoughts besides that, or along those lines, or not along those lines? Okay, good. Go back. Okay. So this is a, there it is. So this is a dog that some of you guys, we've already talked about. So it's going to be a reminder for some of you guys and newish for others. And I'm sorry, but there's only so much video I have. And it is very hard to get video from people who have aggressive dogs and say, by the way, would you mind if I showed this to everybody? You know, because they're sometimes they have privacy issues, and that is understandable. So this Labrador was in the home for 8 weeks of age. He was a fine dog when he was a baby, and then at adolescence he started developing other problems. And his major issues were around possession, food, chewies, balls, kennel, bed. So that's a lot. And you're not seeing it, are you?
No.
That's because, you know, I forgot to plug it in.
Was the dog, is there, when it seems like the dogs get adolescents, that's when things come out, so I can understand that. But do you think there's a difference between dogs who are neutered and not neutered?
Oh my God, yes. There's all these new studies, and I don't know which ones to. There's the latest studies are saying that if you spay or neuter a dog sometime in the first, like, 14, 15 months, that they're more likely to develop fear aggression.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if you don't neuter a dog by the time he's 10 months old, a lot of times they get dominance aggression. So, you know, you're always doing this game.
Yeah.
What I would say, and I think it's a very reasonable thing about, not necessarily about spaying, but about neutering, is you do it when you need to. So I had a Malamute who was never neutered. He was a mental eunuch, I swear it. He never even thought about a girl. He was just a really nice dog, and he never. It was great. I had no, and you know, here's a Malamute. Anybody has to do with Malamute, you get a lot of dominance aggression in Malamutes, a lot of it. And he was just like, oh yay. Also, I lived in Fairfax at the time. This is a long time ago when I just had sheer good luck with dogs, and. I would go for walks in Fairfax, and you know, one of the biggest problems with Malamutes is they're supposed to wander. Chucky never wandered. He was always right there, right with me. And I had two German Shepherds at the same time, and they were intact. So two intact female German Shepherds and a male Malamute. We never had a litter.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, go figure. Go figure. Chucky's biggest, well, he had two behavior problems. His first one was that he was definitely predatory. He He killed all 26 of my guinea pigs in one fell swoop.
You had 26?
Well, you know, we started off with three.
Guess what? 2 weeks later.
This is when I was very young. Guinea pigs have a longer gestation period than that, but not a whole lot longer. And they're baby guinea pigs. If you've never seen a baby guinea pig, anybody ever seen a baby guinea pig? They are the cutest things that you ever put on earth. They come out fully furred and squeaking. So they're not like the little rats and stuff like that. Oh, they're just adorable. So we had, our first guinea pig was named Freebie. Why would that be? And then we got another guinea pig that was a female that we didn't know it, and then we got another guinea pig, and then all of a sudden we had 26. So, you know. And Shuki killed all 26 guinea pigs, so he was definitely predatory. And his other problem was that he did like to go walkabout when we were gone to work, and so he'd go out. We lived on Wood Drive in Fairfax, which is a nice long road, and he would go out, he'd take the fence down. I mean, you gotta figure he's 140 pounds, right? He would just take the fence down, and then he'd go walking up and down the street, and whatever he found, he'd bring back to our house. So I came home once, and there was a baby's bathtub in our front yard. And he brought back things off of people's yards, off people's lines. It was just so funny. So that was the first time I ever used the hot wire, and it worked really well. The shepherds hit the hot wire. You know what they are? Just they're these for cows and horses. You know, so they're a wire that sits on the inside of your regular fence, and when you touch it, it gives you a shock. So it's a hot wire, and the shepherds hit the hot wire. They're like, you know, just doing their rounds, and they hit the hot wire, and they both go like, "Ah, I'm gonna die!" And Shuki goes up to it, and he goes, "Huh." That was it. Never went near the fence again. Oh, never tried it again. Never did anything. He was perfect. He was an odd dog. He died of lung cancer. I mean, he was an odd dog. He was a cool dog. There's a lot of nice things about Chucky. So anyway, so that totally separate from this. The lab that developed possession issues. The husband and the daughter could both control the dog verbally. The wife and the son could not control the dog at all. And they were both intimidated by the dog. The dog intimidated me too, for good reason.
So I'm standing in the kitchen, not looking at Gus, who is standing in his crate. Now, if I turn and look at him, he'll start growling. And if I walk towards him, he'll start growling. He's like half in his crate.
Just off the top of your head, what do you think was motivating the dog? Obviously, he was resource guarding, but what was the emotion?
Anger.
Yeah.
Scared too.
Fear.
Yeah.
And I never did get the reason why the dog was particularly fearful. And I think that it might have. I think the husband was probably heavy-handed, but I'm not sure. I could be doing him a disservice. So So here you are, you've got this client and they've got this dog that you can put him in the kennel, but you can't take him out of the kennel. Because as soon as you get near the kennel, when he is in it, he does that. And when you open the door, he lunges out of it. So this is not just only there. Okay. That if he decides he wants something, he will resource guard it. He resource guards his food. One of the behavior models that we tried that did not work at all was I tried just scattering some food on the floor outside and in the patio, but then he started guarding the entire patio. So I give this to you. What would you do with this? Nice people. I went there twice.
Did you get rid of the crate at first?
I actually suggested that, but he was a total...
Did he bark too much around the
house? No, he was a thief. So he'd go after food, anything up on countertops. He'd take it all down, he'd take it into his crate, and he'd guard it there.
Was it too hard to gate off the kitchen?
Huh?
Was it too hard to gate off those areas? Could you contain?
You couldn't. It was an open.
Yeah.
Open. The house was an open plan.
Did they have kids?
Yeah, they did.
They had two kids, and the daughter and the husband were not afraid of the dog.
That's right.
But the wife and the son were both afraid of the dog.
What did they do differently?
You know, it's like we were talking about. Mm-hmm. I think that the daughter and the father just expected not to get bitten. Mm-hmm. They were just very, very stupid. I mean, if a dog is threatening me, I'm going to start taking it seriously, right?
Yeah.
But they were they just assumed that the dog was not going to do it, and he never did. Which I've seen over and over and over again, and I'm sure you have too. Somebody who runs in and hugs a dog that you know bit somebody, and they're like, oh, it's so cute! And you're like, oh my God, you're going to get bitten. So the wife and the son were both nervous about him. And so he would really do this. And of course, the wife was home most of the time, so he did it mostly to her. So there was another big part of it. Yeah?
How long had they had the dog?
They had had the dog through its whole life, and I think it was about two here. This is actually an impossible case to deal with, right? Because there are too many things. This is one of those things that the reason I think is so valuable is because you go, there are too many things. It's when you walk into a person's house or somebody comes to you for a consult or you want to do something with a, you know, for rehabbing, if you go, I can't think of anything, then there's a good possibility, if you're educated yourself and you know what you're doing, there's a good possibility that there's nothing that can be done, except for perhaps rehoming, but who would want that? You know, who's going to accept that? So I did make some recommendations besides the food. I recommended that they put him in a room instead of a crate. I recommended that they do a lot of obedience in the house. What else did I do? I recommended a lot of impulse control exercises like sit and stays and stuff like that. Nothing that I thought was shattering or shaking or whatever. And they would call and say, no, he's still doing it. And I'd go, you know, you can't keep this dog. You can't keep this dog. He's going to be dangerous. My recommendation in the end was euthanasia because I thought he was just too dangerous to go anywhere with. And so then they come to find out like 2 years later, I get a call from Lab Rescue saying that there was this dog that the people were surrendering, they wanted to surrender to Lab Rescue, and they said they'd seen me. And, you know, what did I think about this dog? Because they were in two minds about it. And I said, don't touch that dog with a 10-foot pole because he's going to be, you know, he's going to be dreadful. So I don't know what happened after that. People were nice all my clients are nice. They're great. And they really did work hard. It's just that there were the personality types of the human beings were too different. And Gus, for whatever reason, we even tried Prozac, I believe, and it didn't do anything at all. So there were, you know, Gus was just too unstable to be able to, I think. Now let's see, now looking this up. Yeah.
You said how old was he when they got him?
He was 8 weeks old. They had him from the time he was a puppy. So in Labradors, the major problems, major behavior issues that we have with labs are... gluttony. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, gluttony. The dog, you could, you know, if you fed him an entire bag, they would just keep eating it and then throw up and eat some more. Right?
Yeah.
So, and going right along with that is food possession. Because as Sue Sternberg used to say, if you go to a party where there's a buffet bar, who are the people who are standing right next to the buffet? The fat ones. Because they think of food as being really, really important. And I don't know if she's right, but I do know that that obese dogs often tend to be real gluttonous eaters. They're not in touch with their appetite. You know, so they don't get full very easily. So anything that he wanted became so important to him that he couldn't really cope with it. Is this making sense? Yeah, okay, Michelle.
Did they ever like try to hand feed him anything? Like if there's one kibble and you're trying to give him one kibble, does he do anything with that?
No, he was fine taking treats. And that, of course, is something that really happens with resource guarding anyway.
Right.
Is that the dog is fine, and people will say this all the time, well, he guards his bowl, but I can give him anything out of my hand. Well, that's because it's yours and you're giving it to him.
Right.
So it belongs to you until it's in his mouth.
Right.
Then try to take it out, and you might have a problem.
Yeah. No, I was just thinking that if I were the owner and I was literally afraid to walk in the kitchen if the dog was eating out of the bowl, then maybe the bowl wouldn't happen, and it would just be like, you know, here's dinner. I mean, because some of it's management. If you're terrified of your own dog, I feel so bad for that woman.
I do too.
Spent 4 years of her life like afraid of this beast in her house.
Yeah, and you know, I've had clients who've lived for 8 years afraid of the beast in their house.
That's what I was wondering. Like, could she like okay, breakfast time?
Okay, so you bring up a good point, and yes, you could do that. I don't know how long you would have to be doing it,
right.
But does that address the other issues?
No, not at all. I'm just sort of like, I feel like sometimes you just need one thing for coping. Like, what's one thing I can actually do? You know what I mean? You're just so desperate and so unhappy with the situation. I don't know.
No, I think you bring up a good point. I just don't know if that one thing would be it.
No, I agree.
I'm just curious.
If the dog would start carving your hand or the kibble or the one.
I doubt it very much. I think the dog was a bright dog and knew how to take food. There are some dogs that actually will snap up at a person after they've given them a treat, but he wasn't one of those.
Okay.
Yes.
Was there a conflict between one parent wanting to get rid of the dog and one wanting to keep the dog?
By the time we'd been, I was brought in there, yeah, because the wife was scared of the dog.
To keep the dog.
Yeah, the husband wasn't seeing it.
Right.
Because he wasn't home that often. He would see it when the dog was on his bed. The dog's bed, I did have to do a lot of management. We moved the bed. The bed was right in the doorway, so you had to walk by it whenever you're walking in and out of the doorway. And so he would growl, and it was very successful as far as he was concerned because people would keep moving. So we did move that, but you know, there were other things. Yeah, Steve?
Did this dog do any of this behavior away from the house?
You know, I don't know. I really don't know. That's a very good point. I don't know why. Maybe I asked and I forgot. I just don't know. Probably not, though. He's probably fine. You know, because all this stuff has to do with mine. Right? My house, my this, my that, my this. Yeah.
At what age did it start? Or was
it started at about 8 months, which is the normal time for behavior problems to start. When they start as a puppy,
yeah,
then you know that there are big, big, big issues.
Yeah.
So, you know, the like the attachment disorder, things like that. Those can be very large if they start as a pup. And if you're going to have problems at a puppy, what you normally see is behavior that would look normal or problematic in an adult dog, and you're seeing it in a puppy, and it should be sending off all kinds of warning signals and red flags in your head about what this is possible. If dog was in crate and growled, woman left, whereas man slammed the top of the crate. That tells you something, doesn't it? So.
Was there an issue between the husband and wife, too, besides...
Oh, about how to treat the dog.
But not otherwise within the relationship?
I have no idea. There are times when I really want to step back.
I know, but sometimes you can see that, though. Right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there have been times when I've suggested that somebody leave somebody else, you know.
Yeah.
But not very many of them.
Okay.
So dog is afraid of male owner, wary of others inside and outside the house. Dog loves male owner most, is somewhat afraid of him though. And that you see a lot, by the way. The dog that really loves somebody who is not necessarily nice to him And I think of it as being the same thing as like an abused spouse.
Yeah, exactly.
Trying to please, and just saying, oh, everything is fine because I made it all fine, and then something happens, and then the person gets angry, and then, oh, everything is fine again. So I think that kind of thing happens. So after we talked a lot, the male owner stopped using physical reprimands, but by that time it might have been too late. And remember, when you use physical reprimands on a dog, the dog then thinks of that as being the normal way to punish. And so then they will use physical reprimands on anybody else. This is how learning takes place, right? So if you hit a dog because you're angry with the dog, then the dog is likely to bite you back or bite somebody else because that's how they learn to punish. And I think that that's something that is forgotten a great deal. So management, remove crate. Yes, remember I said that they were really worried about that. Remove the bed during the day, move position all the time. So that was like, you know, okay, playing, you know. Actually, I suggested that they got multiple beds because that sometimes helps, but I don't think they ever did that. Remove high-value items and replace with low-value, easily fully ingested. So what I wanted to see was if they gave him something that he could eat it really fast instead of having to worry about guarding it from them so that they could still be seen as very generous, which I think addresses what you were talking about, Michelle, a bit. They can be seen as generous, but it's not going to rebound back on them. Block off the kitchen completely to dog. That didn't work because of the open plan in the kitchen. And feeding, feed good quality kibble. Use two or three bowls, picking up one when he was eating out of the other one. So this is a way to do behavior modification for resource guarding. It's not one I currently use very much, but at the time I was thinking, okay, we got to do something. So you have three bowls of food. You put one down, then you put another one down, and then when you're putting the third one down, you go pick up the first one. So this is kind of, you know, what happens is the dog thinks, oh my God, this is a never-ending supply of food. But you're never near their mouth. So you're never actually, I think Ian Dunbar really likes this method. He likes that, and he likes stupid waiter method. The stupid waiter is you put a little bit of food in there, and then you go back later and you go, oh my God, you don't have very much food in there, do you? And you put some more food in there. And you go back and go, oh my God, you don't have very much food. So he calls it stupid waiter. Well, I do the stupid mommy trick. You know, the stupid mommy trick is the dog is trying to get attention from me, and I go, oh, did you want to go outside? And I take him outside, and I put him outside with a leash on so they can't go anywhere. And then I bring him back inside again, and they go, you are dumb. And then I go, they start barking at me or whatever, and I go, you want to go outside again? And they take him back outside again. And after three repetitions, they're like, this is the stupidest woman in the world. I am not going to deal with her ever again. It works like a charm, by the way. It really works for attention-grabbing dogs. It's like, okay, I'll give you attention. It'll just be completely the opposite of what you want. So, yeah, hand feeding, good food. So, obviously, we did do that. This has been a while, so I couldn't remember. Yeah. And removing all bowls between feeding times. Exercise regularly enough so that he's getting stimulation on a daily basis. They had a tendency, you can tell, he didn't get a lot of exercise, or I think you can tell. So they were just doing walks on the weekends only, and I wanted to see some daily kind of walks with him. Regulating the amount of attention he gets on demand, particularly from the wife and son.
Wait, was he bad on leash?
He was just a jerk. He just did what he wanted to do, and he dragged them along with him. You know, he wasn't a bad dog on leash. I don't think he was leash reactive or anything. Okay, so they decided not to keep the dog in. As I said, that's a really good thing. I mean, you know, when we talk about these kind of cases, you have to remember that out of, I'm trying to think how many cases, I do usually 5 to 10 consults a week. So I've say 5 consults a week, and I do that 50 weeks a year. The vast majority, 90% of them are going to be fine. They're going to be fine. So when we're talking about this stuff, we're not talking about the fine dogs. We're talking about the dogs where you end up having to try a whole bunch of different things to try to make it work. Because in so many cases, it's like you were saying about Katie, you know, in so many cases, if you do a concerted behavior modification effort, even if you do one that's different than your colleague would do, it's going to work because you're concerted and you're being good about it and all that. It's when people kind of search around for all different kinds of methods that doesn't work, and also if what, or if they're not consistent. And the biggest issue, of course, is consistency. Human beings are just not consistent. we have a hard time being consistent with our children, much less our dogs. So this is a 5-year-old herding mix. He had separation anxiety, stranger aggression, and aggressive to the father of their baby. So this was the baby, when I saw the baby, he or she was...
I just changed father. I just read that it says changed father. She got rid of the father.
Has changed father. Yeah, we decided that maybe another father would be a good idea. Yeah, why not? I want this father. I don't want that father. So he had not bitten the father, but he put himself between the mother and the baby, in between the two of them and the father. The woman had a tendency to kind of build a little nest herself, and then the dog would sit. So here he is, right here. And here's the father going into the room. Whoops. Come on, are you going to actually do it? There it goes.
Sam, hush. Hush.
You're not liking daddy coming in? Okay. Yeah, you're protecting your baby and your mom.
Sam, stop.
Can you hear him growl?
Yeah.
And look at that stare. That was me going there, and I'm like, no, I'm not going to eat
it. Daddy even sits over here, no.
That was you?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, I'm not going any further in. Yeah, he didn't take the video. I took the video. So, nice people. But you know, we're sitting on the couch, and Flaca and Asa and Heather will come up and just throw themselves in our lap, and their tongues will flop all over us. And, you know, we take them for granted. Aspen, every once in a while, comes up and says, pet me right here. And both of us feel honored. It's a ridiculous situation. But we both feel like, well, she doesn't do this very often, so we feel kind of honored that she does it. So I understand what this woman was feeling, but she actually felt honored that her dog was protecting her, even though it was against her husband. And you can see, you can see all the things that I had to work with there, right? You know, there's an awful lot. And the husband, who was a really, really, really one of these nice guys, so nice, it was cloyingly nice, and he tried to spend a great deal of time, you know, trying to please both of them. What would you like now? Would it be okay? And, you know, he was asking the dog that, and he'd ask his wife that. And she was much more on the demanding side. And then, as I say, she really kind of liked the fact that the dog was protecting her. The dog was conflicted and confused, potentially dangerous. As I said, he threatened me when I was there. The husband would occasionally take the dog to work, and when he was at work, the dog was fine, except when he went underneath the desk, the husband's desk, and then he would growl at people who went by. So the behavior was generalized. It was not only in one particular locale. It's just that that was a very handleable thing, the going to the desk, okay? So in a way, this is a form of resource guarding, isn't it? Although, I don't know if you can call a baby a resource. Can you call a baby a resource? I suppose it is. It's valuable.
It's valuable.
Valuable, you know. So what would you suggest for that?
When you nurse the baby around the dog, put the dog away when you're nursing. So.
Oh, that would go over like a freaking lead balloon. No way. They lived in San Francisco in a little bitty apartment.
Would you have the husband work with the dog more and build more trust between the dog and the husband?
Well, the problem is that was something that we tried to do. The problem is that everything was fine outside. It was trying to work inside that was hard. Although that was certainly a good thing to do.
So he would resource guard the baby.
Yeah, and the wife.
So what about when the husband held the baby, the father?
He would go, oh, he was interesting. He'd go and find a baby blanket and lie down on it.
Oh.
Yeah, this was his baby. Yeah, for sure.
So when we have this, like, an issue with this, and then my dog was resource guarding me from my daughter, We took several months, but we did very tiny steps with the dog. It was like, okay, my daughter's here and I'm here. We take a step, the dog gets a treat, my partner's giving her a treat, giving him a treat, you know, just like that. Very, very, and it took many months, but it actually worked. There were still occasions we didn't have a bed. Like that, don't come in the bedroom at night, call me from the, hey mom, I'm going to bed. Okay, dog gets off the bed, I leave the room, you know, it's still, we still had that, which was not good either, but.
But your counter conditioning worked.
It worked really well.
But you wanted it to work, this woman.
Yeah,
that's
the thing, Kirsten, yeah. Michelle?
I'm just wondering, you kept talking earlier about how nice the dad was, and he seemed sort of placating and not very, strong. He didn't seem like a leader to me. But
no.
I'm wondering, and you said the woman did. She was more demanding. So I'm just wondering if they were. I mean, you can't change somebody's personality. So I was just wondering though if you could maybe set up some games where you know the husband. Maybe you have to make it seem like a role play or something to get him on board. But the idea of the husband changing his role in the dog's view. So that the dog didn't have this job to do. I feel like the guy was so nice that the dog was taking it upon himself to solve a problem, a perceived problem that wasn't actually a problem. Right?
Yeah, you know, you're always walking this line between being a good leader, and so you want to be a good leader. But you don't want to be a nasty leader. You don't want to be somebody who's too pushy. At the same time that you can't be too unpushy. You can't be too soft.
Yeah.
So this is a really delicate spot that we put ourselves in with some dogs. Not with all dogs by any means, but this guy for sure.
Yeah.
And I think the one that you were talking about, the black mouse cur, the same kind of thing. You have to be so careful with these dogs who are intelligent and who have a strong protective instinct. And you have to be able to tell them what they can protect.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think the games would have been a really good idea.
I think she makes a good point because I have another client that was getting trained by a trainer and he learned everything he needed to do with the dog, but when I arrived, the dog rushed and he was asking, almost like begging the dog to do what he wanted to do, whereas I just came and walked in and he stomped my foot and made him pay attention.
So asking versus telling.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a really big deal. You know, in fact, I would say probably a good 3/4 of my clients ask their dogs, can you sit? And I always want to go, yes, I can. That doesn't mean I'm going to. So, you know, and in fact, of course, nowadays, many people do upspeak, right? Where they end every sentence on an up, the upspeak thing that started off in the Valley Girls and then keeps going, and it's so bad for dogs because it sounds like you're questioning things all the time. Can you do this? Can you do that? And the dog will go, yeah, but why would I? You know, you're not
so
making
what,
me.
So what happened?
So okay. All right. So the dog went on Prozac, which little discernible difference in behavior. The dog is fed Prather Ranch organ meat with Origin kibble. This was way too much protein for this dog. Way too much. I'm like, oh my God, people. Just organ meat? I mean, just think of what's in organ meat. The wife tells the dog to knock off behavior while the husband tries to mollify and soothe him. And then again, I told you about that. So my recommendations included management and relationship adjustment. So I decided to remove the dog from the familial beds. I have no idea whether they did this stuff because they moved. They left town. So they had two different beds that they used, and the dog went on either one. Whichever one the wife was on, the dog went on it. I think in a very anthropomorphic way, I think the wife thought he was her husband. I think we had a really bad relationship here. So to try to get the dog off the bed, and I actually think she liked that. You know, I think she liked the fact that the dog was strong when the guy himself seemed to be pretty weak. To remove the dog when the baby was being fed, which was suggested, that is an important thing. The problem with this was, and this is where you get into troubles with people, of course, is that this woman was completely stuck on her baby. And I think she probably would have fed the baby every 10 minutes. If possible. She just loved this baby so much. I think she was trying to get from the dog and the baby some stuff she wasn't getting from the husband. but I'm not a, you know, I don't know for sure. You know, so, have the dog relax on his own bed rather than between the woman's legs. I mean, there he was lying in between, and that's where he always put himself, between her legs, and then she'd put her foot on top of his head. So this was, you know, this was a bad relationship, or a good relationship as far as the dog is concerned. You know, an appropriate relationship. He claimed the baby's bed, as I mentioned, and you could not remove him. Particularly, the husband couldn't remove him. So if he went onto a baby's blanket, he would not come off of the baby's blanket. And the husband's going, "Come on off, come on, sweetie."
Do you
want to
come off?
What's that?
Do you want to come off?
Yeah. Exactly. Do you want to do that? No, I don't. Thank you very much. I'm good here. Bury the dog's feeding time and drop organ meat entirely from this. So I do believe they did that. But I don't know that.
You saved them so much money.
Yeah.
By telling this to stop that, you saved them dog money.
To stop the organ meat thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because it's very expensive.
So, well, yeah, anything from that ranch is, but it's sustainable, yeah. Whatever. But still, it's so expensive.
Yeah, so, well, I don't know if that bothered them in the slightest. And I don't know why the dog was fed Prather Ranch organ meat either. I don't think I've ever run across somebody who says, "No, I get organ meat from a ranch, and that's what I feed my dog."
Plus origin.
Somebody must have told them.
Plus origin, which is, yeah.
Somebody must have told them that the dog needed.
I don't know. I think that the woman, nice people, as I said, but she was something of a know-it-all. So it could be that she had done some research, decided on this herself, because I don't know anybody that would recommend that. Although I have to say, when I was really young and I was living in England with a roommate and I had a German Shepherd named Sebastian, we didn't have very much money, and so we went to the butcher's and we got lungs. And then we tried to cook them. Have you ever tried to cook lungs? Suffice it to say that when they fill up with water, they get very large. Here we are with this lung. You know? I have no idea if we gave it to. It smelled so bad. I think we just threw it out.
What were you thinking?
So what were we thinking? We were thinking we were 21. We were thinking, we have a dog. It's expensive to feed the dog, and so we'll see if we can get some cheap meat and feed him cheap meat. He was a lovely dog. He used to go every once in a while. He'd go walk about. He'd go on a bus. He'd get up because they can go on the buses in London. They go up on the second story, right? And so he'd go up there on his own and travel around London. They have several shelters. We went to Battersea Shelter, found him there. Somebody found his collar and called us and all. I mean, you know, but he just kind of go, "Well, I'll be off. I'll be back." So, yeah. So, it's called being irresponsible. So anyway, actions. The training that we did, if the dog follows, so the dog had a tendency to follow the woman around, so we did not allow that. So I suggested closing the door and stopping him from doing that. He does not have right of access wherever he wants to have right of access. We did a send a mat exercise that was really good, and I think that they did keep that up. So if he did any kind of growling, he was to be sent to his mat. Then he could be rewarded when he was on his mat, and that was his mat. We didn't worry about having, you know, kind of the human beings taking that mat. I did suggest that they leave a leash on him in the house so that they could pick up the leash and move him to someplace if they wanted to move him there. I don't know whether they followed that. So the primary focus was on the wait and watch. So the tendency, the dog, as you could see when he was staring at me, right, he has a tendency to gaze towards a perceived threat, and I really wanted them to get his attention away from the threat and back to them. So we did a lot of wait. It was very pleasant, lots of fun, a lot of watch. Watch isn't something I worry about most of the time, but in this case, I worried about it a lot. And I think that the husband wrote to me and he said that they were getting some places on that. But, you know, honestly, I think he was so afraid of the dog that if the dog didn't watch, he probably wasn't going to keep on insisting. The go-to-mat, which I mentioned, and reinforcing the dog when he is doing what you want. So strong reinforcements, telling the dog when he's doing something you want him to do, and managing your way around the other things. Prognosis, the dog did get better in some areas, but management is difficult because of the owner's attitude. the one owner thinking that the dog is doing her a favor and the other one thinking that the dog is scary as all get out. So I actually, in this case, feel extremely sorry for the dog. This dog is being given a ton of responsibility and also is in the middle of a family argument. This is not fair on the dog. He should be given, and I did try to tell them this, you know, he should be given the jobs that you wish him to do, and he has got a protective nature, so you might actually want him to do some protecting of something. I don't know what it might be. But take away this job that is you know, that is cracking your whole relationship, everything about your relationship. So I kept in touch with him for several months. We did a lot of phone consults, which I didn't write down, unfortunately. And then they ended up moving back east. They were going to come back out here again, but I don't know if they ever did. So, but it was a serious issue because I knew that he really was going to bite the owner. He was definitely going to do that. Resource guarding. This is my daughter's dog, Gambit. See if I can show a video of Gambit. Here we go. Then I'll go back.
I don't know why you got your teeth all snarly. Gambit. Why? Why? Oh, eat a bear.
My daughter.
He's terrible. Okay. You're so dense. I want you to do it. He's the man of the year. He's the man of the year.
The doctor, she'll be in on Monday, so I can leave her a message to review the file. What's the phone number?
So the reason I thought this is a good video is because he is really interesting in that resource guarding by its nature is something that's a hindbrain behavior. Right? If a dog is resource guarding, they are not thinking about you. They're not going, oh, this is my nice master who's just coming over to say hello to me when I'm eating. They go into an altered state where, as you could see, if you looked at his eyes, they go flat black, right? So you get the fully dilated pupils. And they are incapable of making judgments at that point. So he adores my daughter. They adore each other. I mean, he is a great little dog. You know, if he came in here, you'd go, oh my God, this is the best little dog. If you open your hands like this, he leaps up into your arms. He's just a really nice little dog. But when he's around food, and he was a stray, and a lot of strays have this problem, so he kind of goes into this state. What is most interesting to me about this is that he actually has an inhibition. He doesn't go all the way. He just stops where he is, and then she can... Now, if that was not my daughter, you know, I don't know what would happen if it was somebody else. But with her, he absolutely can put a trigger on it. I mean, put an inhibition on the trigger, which is kind of interesting. But the most important thing about resource guarding, whether it's in a shelter or at home or in your house, somebody else's house, is that it's really important to remember that it's a hindbrain function. Because trying to work with it by doing, you know, kind of confronting the dog, which a lot of trainers do, is not going to work. Because you're confronting somebody who's already in a state where they're not thinking. They're not.
Is that what she was trying to do, though? It looked to me like she was
trying to
work.
No, she was doing it because she knew he would do it and she wanted to do it for the video.
Because she touched the food?
She was showing him off.
Yeah. Trish, what if she picked up the bowl but didn't touch the dog? What happened?
I would think he wouldn't do anything at all. I mean, he would just growl a little bit more. I don't think that he has never bitten her. He's never bitten anybody else. I think that I've told her I didn't think it was a good idea for her to tease him like this, but, you know, she's well beyond the age of 21, so she's not going to listen to me. And most of the time he doesn't do this kind of stuff. So resource guarding can be many forms, as we saw with Gus at the Labrador. He had a lot of resource guarding. food, chewies, toys, beds, humans, guarding from other dogs, long distance from other dogs, and body parts. And there are some dogs that absolutely go after their own body parts. What did I saw? Oh, German Shepherd. I saw last week, I guess, so I probably didn't talk to you about him. He was a, the people brought in the dog from the East Bay, and we met at the Civic Center in San Francisco. And I don't like to do this. I like to go to people's homes, but in this case, it was what we could do. And the behavior problem was that the dog has bitten several people now in the house. He's definitely a resource guarder. He's bitten, they were playing with a pinata, and he bit one of her friends. I think he's like 14 months old, big shepherd, like over 100 pound shepherd, big guy. And so she took the dog out of the car, and we're talking, and he came over and I petted him. He was fine. And then I kind of went close to the car, and she puts a water dish down by the car. And without any kind of warning that I saw, of course I really wasn't watching him as well as I should have been, he turned and went for my hand.
Ooh.
And he bit my hand about 8 times. He did not bite hard. He just went, bop, 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 bop. It was like he's going, you do that again and you're going to be really sorry. And I'm like, your dog just bit me. And she goes, yeah, that's what he does. I said, did you know he guarded water? And she said, no, she didn't know he guarded water. But I think he guards anything that he finds to be of any kind of value. And the water at that point was valuable, and so he was guarding the water. He could have been guarding the car, but I think it was the water because of where it was. So, they can guard anything. And we've seen dogs, and I used to, in my naive days, I didn't think dogs guarded water, but you go to a dog park and you can see them guarding water. You know, they'll guard all kinds of stuff. So there is a possession scale, which is, first of all, none, which is obviously none, you know. And that would be a dog that just says, okay, whatever. So with Aspen, no, you know, I'm not doing it. With Aspen, if she's got a bully stick, because she gets her bully stick when the other dogs are playing outside, she gets her bully stick then. And so when the good dogs come inside, we just take the bully stick away from her. She has no resource guarding. There's none. Minor resource guarding would be eating faster, like I gotta beat you to this. Medium would be a freeze and a stare. Again, medium, freeze, walk away from Chester, and you'll see this where they kind of like this, and then they kind of freeze and they go, nah, 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 nah. You know, it's as though I would confront you, but I'm not going to, because I'm too good of a dog. Serious, freezes, stares, and snaps. Very serious. Where freezes, stares, and bites your hand or a fake hand. Extremely serious, bites, no warning. That's the one that this guy had. He was up there at the top of that level. He was biting with no warning. When you were coming close to something, he didn't even tell you that was something he was guarding. That's scary.
How about the Roddy we saw?
I know, I was just going to ask that.
Is that number 6?
That dog is this one here.
Yeah.
Very, not as bad as this, because he did give a warning. But it wasn't very much of a warning. But he's a Rottweiler. He doesn't have that option. And then the biggest thing on a possession scale, in my opinion, is this one. A dog that guards more than one thing. So if you have a dog that just guards chewies, you're okay. Or just guards balls, or just guards whatever. You can work with it, and you can probably fix it. And sometimes you can fix it completely. But if a dog guards a variety of different things, you have a much less of a chance to actually do this. And this is one of the problems with resource guarding tests in shelters, is that they usually only use food and or chew toys. And they don't have any option. It's not like you could do it with a piece of Kleenex or something like that. But it is really good to keep an eye out and see whether or not that actually can take place. Yeah?
Number 3 through 6, does that include growling?
Yeah, it does. Sorry, I forgot to put growling in there. I guess I just assumed it was, yes, it's in growling.
At number 2, they wouldn't be growling?
No, there would not be any growling. Not normally. You just get this, kind of really eating faster thing. I'll add the growling to the side. So the food guarding is the easiest to spot and the easiest to work on at low levels. I don't know if this is video or not. No, it's not. Okay, so this is This is a little Frenchie. Isn't she cute? I saw a Frenchie this past Sunday with guarding issues, come to think of it. So this little dog guards her food, but it's, I would call it, you know, level one or possibly level two guarding. The other Frenchie that I saw with ball guarding issues, it was very interesting, and I'll talk about it right after this because both of them are fascinating. So this is a little girl dog with her very loving mom.
Watch me. Okay.
So now we got eating faster and good job. I don't think so. I think she was just doing that. So what I was telling you about the altered state.
Yeah.
So as soon as her head goes down in there, she starts growling. And then as soon as her head's back up again, she's like, oh, I'm going to do a dance for you. You're going to really like this. You know. So this is what I was called for. And I loved the dogs. And it's like I said the last time I went to see a Frenchie. I don't know. These dogs are anomalies. They shouldn't exist, and they're still as cute as bugs. I mean, just, you know, they really shouldn't. So let's talk about her a little bit. So with this dog in particular, with the problem was in the food only when she was eating her meal. You could take a chewy away from her. You could take anything away from her at other times, but it was this meal. So what we decided with this particular dog was let it go. Just let it go, because she's going to outgrow it. She's very young. She's like 6-7 months old. And as long as she's not threatened by anything, I think everything's going to be fine. Now, what we want to be able to do is walk past her, right? So I said, when you're walking past her, just take a treat and toss the treat into the, or better yet, ask her to sit for it and give it to her and just keep going. But don't worry about it. And since then, I've heard from her. This was like last year or something. I've heard from her, and she says the dog is fine. There's no issue. So there are times that if you work on it, you're actually going to make it worse. So you have to be able to, and again, this was a singleton thing. She was only guarding her food. That is all.
What if she was older?
If she was older, again, I would think it would be a matter of, if it's only food, then give her the food, give it in your crate, and then pick the bowl up and just forget it. Okay. Unless there are children in the house, and then you have a bigger deal.
How big? Like, for example, the little chihuahua that I was fostering,
right?
I'm keeping.
That you're keeping? Oh, yet another failed foster. Yeah.
So, he obviously was never given anything of high value. So we gave him something, and he would do the growling and all that good stuff. And I just, you know, would pet him from the back and just each time just keep going until, you know, pet him. And he actually will come to me with whatever it is and sit in my lap or next to me. Probably because of the other dogs. You know, the other dogs will be doing their own thing, but I don't know.
He probably felt threatened by them.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I've always done, like, with my German Shepherds who pass. Like, I would give them stuff and you know, see, you know, work to the point where I could just, you know, pet them next to their face and they're not trying to get me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. What you're doing is teaching them to accept your presence and that you are not a threat.
Right.
Right? That's what you're doing. And that is fine. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely fine. And you could certainly do that with this little dog. You could start petting her every time you fed her. There is a certain amount of, I want to be left alone when I'm eating. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I think there is that might be something that you would consider as to whether the dog, now your little chihuahua actually will bring the thing to you, so you know that dog does not want to be left alone while it's eating. But there are dogs that just really don't want to have anything to do with it. And if it's one item and it's a very controllable item and you don't have children in the house, you're probably going to be fine. Now, I did have Sophie, who was my Cairn Terrier that I got from a family, and she had very bad resource guarding, and my daughter was living there, but she was old enough so that we could just, and she was really only food. No, it wasn't. It was Two Toys too. But she didn't really get Two Toys very often, so it never came up as a big problem. It was just something for me to show off. to say, look how possessive this dog is. You could pick her up with a, you know, and she'd be holding on to it. Look, my dog. Here's my dog.
Trish, do you think, I have a theory, that Cesar Millan has created so much more
food?
Because in his Art of Raising the Perfect Puppy, he tells you to keep taking the food away.
I know.
And I had all these parents at school and we talk about, you know, when I grab the dish away,
they growl.
Yeah. So why do you keep taking the food away? But,
yeah, no, I wouldn't do that to my dogs.
So I wonder if that's a newer problem, though.
No, I think there have always been people who want to confront dogs on anything that they don't think is right. They don't give the dog any kind of rights of their own. And so I think Cesar Millan is actually personifying that. But I think that it has existed. You know, if you ever want to do some really cool reading, read Bill Koehler, K-O-E-H-L-E-R. He was a big dog trainer back in the 1950s, and he was much of the reason why why compulsive trainers do the things they do now. So, for instance, when Chucky, our Malamute, ate all of my, not the guinea pigs, I had bonsai trees, and he ate all of them. He scattered them all. And I was very upset, and we had the book, the Bill Koehler book, and we looked it up, and it said, well, you take a piece of what they've eaten, and you tie it around their mouth, and you leave it there for 24 hours.
Jeez.
And so that's what my then-husband did. He just took a big piece of tree and tied it around and put duct tape on it.
Oh, my God.
And I lasted about an hour, and then I didn't do it. He never did it again, but I didn't grow any more bonsais. But, you know, that's Bill Koehler really started an awful lot of this stuff, and Cesar Millan is the same. And I think of it as being a kind of an insecure way of training. It's thinking that everybody is trying to get you all the time, that you have to confront and you have to win, as though life is a contest that you have to win. And I don't think that that's necessarily the case. So, but yes, Cesar Millan hasn't helped. There's that wonderful video of him and the Labrador.
Yeah.
And you know, he hasn't helped at all. So the other Frenchie, I have to find him because he's just so cute. Hang on a second, he's just really adorable. See if I can. Trish, put your glasses on. I can't even find my glasses. There they are. I hate getting older. There it is. No, that's not it. Where's his? Dang, I thought I had his picture. His name is Teddy. He's a little black and brown guy, and he's just absolutely adorable. And anyway, if he gets a ball in his mouth, you cannot get it out for love nor money. You just can't get it out. And they've tried everything to get this ball out of the dog's mouth. Or they thought they would try everything. And the problem is he'll run and get somebody else's ball. So this is where you're getting issues, okay? It's not just his ball that he's possessive of. But they happen to live in an apartment complex that has a lot of dogs, and they have a lot of dog play areas.
Oh, does he live in Petaluma?
No.
Oh,
no. I'm now the new Frenchie person, because all the Frenchie people are all calling me because, oh yeah, I got a Frenchie that's got a problem. And he's so cute. He puts a ball and he puts it right in his mouth, right like this, and it's one of those little chuck it balls. I can't go out of his mouth. You can do anything. And so this poor woman's going, you know, I tried everything. I tried to stick a treat in his mouth, and he still wouldn't get it. And they try to pull a mouth open like this. And people keep telling him that, oh, you've got to win. Speaking of winning, you have to win. He has to give that up to you, otherwise he's alpha over you.
And this Frenchie.
That was a really big part of our consult, is how alpha they were and how alpha he was. And I said, you know, don't even worry about that. The mere fact that he's living in your house means that you're alpha. And that you're giving him food, and that, you know, don't worry about that. What we need to worry about is getting him to give up stuff.
Yeah.
And so he goes, so we played a game. And the game was a great game, and they were so happy. This is one that Chirag Patel, have you heard of him? Yeah, he's cool. He's really, he's got a lot of videos, and he does some talks and whatnot. Chirag Patel.
His drop-in is awesome.
P-A-T-E-L. I think it's, what's it called? Domestic Manners. Domesticated Manners is his website. And he's really good. I like him a lot. But anyway, he has this way of working with Drop It and whatnot that worked so well in this dog that they were laughing like crazy at the end of the consult. It was one of those consults where I go, yes, I am invincible. No. So all you do, in case you have a dog that does this kind of stuff, is you start to make other things very attractive without confronting the dog, which is what we do when we're doing behavior mod for other kinds of resource guarding too. But just say this is the floor, okay, and here's the dog, and he's got the ball. Then I had two pieces of cheese. You take pieces of cheese and you go, look, get this, and you can say drop it right then, starting to say drop it right then, even though it has nothing to do with the behavior. So you go, drop it, and he goes over to this, and drop it, and he'll drop the ball, but you don't go get the ball. You just let it be. And you keep on doing this over and over, and then after a while you pick up the ball and you put it back down again. You drop it. And what'll happen after, maybe 2-3 sessions, is you say drop it, he'll drop the ball to go get something else. And then eventually it just generalizes. It's such a cool way to do it. And Chirag has a really nice video on it if you're interested in doing it. So, you know, as again, I really like his way of doing stuff for that. But they think I'm a miracle worker, which is just really cool. So with general food guarding protocols, what my belief is that you need to take the dog out of his hind brain and put him in his front brain. And the way to do that is to do exactly what happened with the little brown Frenchie and get him to look up. So they have to sit up. So this method was developed by Sophia Yin. I was doing the same kind of thing, but she put little finishing touches on it that I really liked. I'm so sorry she's gone. So you give the dog a bowl of food with some food in it, not very much, but just as they finish, you step towards the dog and step towards him and ask her to sit. That would be hard. Right? Step towards him and ask him to sit. And when he sits, you give him a treat, and then you back off, and and then you back off and you keep on doing that. You put a little bit more in. And what you're doing is, all you're doing is teaching the dog to sit upon approach. That's it. So the end result is the dog is going to be there like so, right? And you come up and he's going to see your feet moving towards you and he'll sit up. And bingo, you're in they're in the right mind. Now, if you've got a dog that's really, really possessive, you can toss the treat over to the side so that you get them away from the bowl. But for most dogs, this is enough. It's amazingly enough. And, you know, so I think I've probably saved some dogs' lives by using this behavior modification protocol. And it's certainly a fun one for both dog and people to use.
What if the dog, as you get closer, let's say you're like 10 feet away and the dog freezes and does like a little...
Yeah, that's long distance long distance guarding is a really different thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'll go back to that. Okay. So that when you're doing chewies, you do the same thing so that you give them something that's big enough so that they can't take it under something. Because as soon as the dog takes it under something, mm-hmm. The resource guarding is magnified 100-fold. And so when you reach your hand under there, how many people do you know who have been bitten by putting their hand underneath a bed to try to get something away from that, like a sock away from a dog? Because as soon as they have it in a defendable spot, they will use it there, and we don't want them to use it there. So we want to have something that's big enough as like a bone or whatever that can't be taken underneath something, underneath a chair or whatever. So you do the same thing though, you cue the dog to sit, offer something delicious, and then you give the dog chewy, you either don't take the chewy away, or as it gets better, you take the chewy, give the dog something, and then give the chewy back. So you're just being seen as very, very generous. So, you know, it's an old joke, and I've told it many times, but you know, if you're eating your dessert, and you really like your dessert, and the waiter comes to take the dessert before you're ready for it, the first time, you're just going to go like this, right? This is my dessert, you can't have it. The second time, you might go, hey, what do you think you're doing? What we are not likely to do is to take your fork and go, you know. So they were trying to prevent that. So, but if the waiter was bringing you something really good, you know, at the same time, like another dessert, then you would be quite happy. You know, there would be no problem with that. So when you cue a dog to sit, you bring him into his frontal, into his prefrontal cortex. He has to think, and when he does so, the urge to bite recedes. That makes sense? And that does not work on all dogs. But we've already been asked to talking about the fact that nothing works on all dogs. So that's why it's an interesting profession. So as time goes on, the dog starts eating less automatically and more mindfully. And that is what our goal is. So other protocols that people use, adding better food to the bowl, 3 or 4 bowl method, which we talked about, feeding without a bowl, which we also talked about a little bit, and feeding via hunting, which would be going out in the backyard and spreading food all over the place, and they can just look for their food and start hunting that way. And believe me, if you feed via hunting protocols or that kind of thing, you don't get resource guarding because they're always busy looking for the next one. So, you know, it is a really nice way to stop it. Now, with Gus, he probably would have started to resource guard the entire backyard. So it does not work on all dogs. All right, so resource guarding, long distance. So this is the dog that you are here, they are there.
Yep.
They think that you are considering going and getting there.
Yeah, I could see the freeze. And you could see the whale eye, and then and I knew what it was, and I went, oh, that's nice. Go ahead and eat food. And then,
what dog was this?
This was Buster. This was right when we got him. I actually ended up hand feeding him raw food for like 3 months and doing a ton of training with every meal that we did, and it got a ton better with the people. It was almost 100% better. Our little tenacious dog. We have to be really careful with that because that was
so
that actually got bit, but it was, I recognized it like immediately because they said, oh, he's perfect. And then I was like, oh.
Yeah, well, when they're doing long distance guarding,
yeah.
they think they have a reason.
Yeah.
Because they're not in their hindbrain yet. They are still in their front. They're so this is suspicion. Right? So you can do the same thing that you did here. You can ask the dog to sit and then toss them a treat and then slowly get closer and closer and closer. I think your method was probably better, just hand feeding so the dog stops thinking of this as being something that makes him suspicious.
It's so much fun.
I mean, I think you're probably better off doing that, but you certainly can do the, you know, tossing a treat to the dog and all that kind of stuff. It's what's really hard is when you get long distance guarding with other dogs. That becomes a really big issue. So, you know, I have to be very careful with that one. So, I know that some of you, remember Bella? I talked to some of you, I want to talk about Bella, but I don't want to, you know. Okay. All right, I'll talk about Bella. Bella is a red golden. Red lab? Red lab. I didn't know there were red labs. But apparently red labs are actually white labs now. Do you know that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And there are, you know, probably going to be green ones, certainly. So this couple acquired Bella from a Craigslist ad and when she was quite young. I think she was like 12 weeks old. But the family had several small kids. The husband had gotten the 6-week-old puppy without asking the wife. The wife was livid. And the puppy was primarily kept in a crate in the garage. So from the age of 6 weeks to, I think, they didn't get it at 8 weeks, but probably 9 weeks of age, they just kept it in the crate in the car and in the garage. And you know that feels like it's just 3 weeks, but that's 3 really important weeks that the dog was kept there. So they got her at, I think it was 9 weeks, it wasn't 8 weeks, but they didn't, you know, there was a time when the dog was just kept in the garage. According to the owners, Bella was a very sweet, compliant, although demanding dog, obedient, and growled when eating food. She did not like the wife, although she would tolerate her. She did really, really, really like the husband. And he was, I wouldn't say he's heavy-handed, but he was definitely more demanding of Bella, for sure. So this is Bella, and this is a video that he sent to me.
What are we here for?
She's trying to back away to get her in her comfort zone again. She doesn't like
she has nothing to do. Hey, Bill,
me being
what's
here.
Up? No.
She doesn't like me being here.
No.
Maybe I should throw a treat at her.
Oh.
Go back. Call her to you. Should I just walk up and give it to her? Bella! Here you go. No. No, little girl.
Okay. What do you think?
That's what they were told to do. You know, they've taken the dog to classes and stuff like that. They were told to not put the food down unless the dog was being compliant. And so he was kind of almost teasing the dog with the bowl. And he may have misread instructions, I don't know, you know. So they did try putting treats in the bowl as she ate and she growled. So they did try that method first. They did take advice to pin her when she did that. Well, okay, so you do something brand new, you get a brand new TV, and somebody says you take this and you put that there. You know, you don't know what you're doing, and so you take this and put that there, and then you discover you're given a shock, right? So you have to forgive these people for doing something that supposed experts tell them to do. So the behavior got much worse, and luckily he stopped. They stopped doing it. They leashed her and fed her in the middle of the room, and they got then gave her a leash correction when she snarled, and the behavior got a lot worse. So pinning and then leash correction. So now we have a dog that's pretty damn sure that there's that people are dangerous around food, because that would be where I would go if I were her. So they put her on a gentle leader, fed her by hand, and then also corrected her for growling, which she did consistently. So can you imagine, you put a gentle leader on the dog, you're feeding her by hand, and she growls, and you're going, stop it. So, talk about mixed signals. This poor little girl is getting all these mixed. So what happened is, after all of these things that took place over a period of weeks, Bella bit Jeff while he was hand feeding her, because she doesn't trust his hands. She didn't trust his hands at all. And then they followed the sit for the treat thing, which the one that I just talked about, which worked a little bit, and then it stopped working. And then Bella bit Jeff as he walked towards the cabinet. So now the food is it's getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. So we're doing this consult. It was a distance consult, and we're doing this by Skype, right? And I said, okay, we're going to put Bella on Skype. So we actually, they put their computer on the floor, and I watched her through the computer when we were doing this. And this is what we came up with, because we removed the bowl of food entirely. We fed her on the floor. They moved it to a big tray that looks just like a great big dog bone, which is really cute. And I said, leave her alone, completely. Put the food down, leave her alone, and leave the computer on, because I want to watch her. So I could watch her through the computer. And she relaxed. As soon as they left, she relaxed. You could just feel her relaxation, because she didn't feel like she was being, threatened anymore. And so then I called them when she was done, and they came back in again. And then I said, okay, I want you to just tell her she's a good girl, give her a treat, and then we're done for the day. And this is how you're going to feed her. And you're going to feed her like this for 3 weeks. So this is why they came up with a tray, as opposed to all over the floor. And so what we were doing is taking all the pressure off of her. So then I said, as soon as you, you know, after this period of time, then you kind of start walking around her while she is eating. But don't try to take anything away. Don't even consider doing that kind of stuff. And so they did, and it started to work. There it is. She is bigger. She is bigger.
Yeah. Oh, good puppy.
The kid's great.
Take it. Good girl.
Hey, why don't you come in here, Paul, and make your food?
The normal laugh. Yeah. This could never happen
before. And there's the husband right there. So she's no longer going to be
able to. No hair on her back, that's fine.
Mowing around the kitchen, around the kitchen top.
The biggest issue is trying to talk to Jasmine and not push her.
Maybe don't start it yet. Let's see how loud I can start it. It might be too loud. Maybe I can start it. So we won't be able to hear the volume on this, but. That's fine. Some noise, yeah.
But they're just right there. This is not a castle.
Nope. No? Nothing yet. We're supposed to just let her finish and wander around until she comes sees us. At the point at which she's greeting us and she recognizes us.
I think the behavior problem starts because we start trying to be able to not be too concerned. I don't think she needed it. If it was all over the time. But there she is. She says, okay, I'm going to be here now.
Get her used to people.
She actually started to like the life. Which is a really big deal.
Okay, acknowledge her.
Was she there?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, pup. Girl.
Hey, Belle, look at me.
I want you to look at me. I'm more important.
Wow, there's
trouble. So, it was, yes, she did actually, she started guarding her balls and her bones. So what we did is just added a whole bunch of balls and bones and it went away. It totally went away. But this is, I guess, as a thing to end the class with, this is a good one, which is like, I had to sit there and think about what you would do to try to solve this behavior problem while helping the people establish a better relationship with their dog, and so that the dog didn't start biting them more. Because the guy wanted to, you know, he wanted to hit the dog and the dog bit him. Yeah. He was good about accepting structure and he was good about accepting instructions. It was just that, I mean, and that's what you want to do if somebody bites you. You do. You want to kind of nail them, you know, and you have to actually say, okay, this is not done. This is, it's nothing personal. I'm not doing it personally. Any thoughts? Okay, so next week we do have a consult, and it'll be at 2:00.